So most people, including myself, say that they want to use their phone less, but somehow we still pick it up hundreds of times a day. I know when I'm laying in my yoga class, I'm thinking about picking up my phone when I get out of there to see who's messaged me, to see what's going on. Today we're talking about how to outsmart your smartphone so you can reclaim hours of your day and feel calmer without giving up your digital life. MJ Murray Vachon is a licensed clinical social worker and host of the podcast Creating Midlife Calm, where she shares practical tools for mental wellness. And she's here today to discuss all things about outsmarting our smartphones. MJ, it's really great to have you here.
Thanks. I'm really happy to join your show.
Yeah, I'm pumped. This is a topic that everyone can relate to. Every time I walk down the street or I'm anywhere, all I see is people with their heads down on their phone. And I know that most people say they want to use their phone less, but they always feel so compelled to pick it up. So, can you maybe explain to us a little bit what's happening with the brain or nervous system that makes it so hard to resist?
I think the key word that you said is compelled. We are compelled. And I think if we understand the science of the phone, yes, there is a science of the phone, it really helps us be less judgy towards ourselves. And I think it's empowering. So when those tech bros created this phone just, 20 or 25 years ago, the phone is, 2007. So it's a teenager that's messing with our minds. They
Yes.
w used the latest information from neuroscience and they developed it so we it's perfectly synced up to the reward system in our brain. And when we get on it, we get hits of dopamine and that
Yeah.
feels good. And I mean, you tell me, do you think that most people know this who are out walking the street with their phone? Or do you think they really don't know that this thing is perfectly synced up to the reward system of their brain?
I think people are so programmed that the dopamine hits are already, they're already gone. It's an addiction at this point. I think when we bring it to the forefront and talk about it, people say, oh my gosh, that makes so much sense. But honestly, I think it's autopilot at this point. What are your thoughts?
Yes. Well, and it's not thoughts, it's science. The facts are. We crave dopamine. It's the pleasure system of our brain. But the phone is different because it dumps dopamine very quickly and very intensely. So those first 5, 10, 15 minutes when we're on it are truly pleasurable. And it's the kind of pleasure that's very different for our brain to experience than how for thousands of years the brain experienced pleasure. The brain's an old organ and it adapts over time and it's used to getting rewards like a sunset. Oh, that's lovely. A hug. Oh, that's great. Watching a fun movie. Oh, that kind of makes me laugh. Those are rewards that are slow. But the way the phone is, it's an intense and rapid reward. And then the brain just wants more. So it's much similar to cocaine than a sunset.
Wow.
And everybody knows the consequence and how easy it is to want more cocaine because reward is great, pleasure is great. And so I think the one thing that people have to really understand is this phone was designed to hook us, and it has.
So I recently have seen a lot of different papers done on how phones are actually increasing anxiety. So can you talk a little bit about how that's happening and why that's happening?
Yeah, I think it's a rather easy and complex answer at the same time. The easy answer goes back to the reward system, is that because it dumps our dopamine, it uses it so quickly, 20 minutes, 15 minutes, when we get off, we're irritable. And anybody who's ever parented a child who's playing a video game, so we're talking devices, whether it's an iPad, whether it's a video game, whether it's a phone. If you have, and I ran this experiment with one of my nephews, he let his child play the video game as long as the child wanted. When he got off, he was irritable. Why? Because his dopamine system had been fairly depleted. We're not talking like completely emptied, but just emptied too quickly. And this is a system that's meant to release dopamine, replenish it, release it, replenish it. It's not meant to dump it because it can't replenish it fast enough. So what some people experience is irritation. What other people experience is anxiety. So that's like the science. It's just a neurochemical process that happens in our body that we do not have control over. We are not stronger than the impact on the phone. But the other part of anxiety that I think is a little more nuanced and subtle, that doesn't get talked about, I think, as much as the biological one, is just the impact that it's having on us being alone and together. That the phone meets my needs perfectly, just perfectly. I can look at what I want. I can scroll past it if I don't. I can see something funny. I can see something serious. So I am pretty content by myself. And it also means that I'm less content with other people because we are slowly losing this capacity to do this with each other. Because most of our day, whether we're working on a computer, doing our thing by ourselves, whether we're at home watching a movie while we scroll, is not really interacting with other humans. And it's really being fed something that's depleting us. But because those first 5, 10, 15 minutes are so fulfilling, what we're trying to do is get back to that experience. And so that's one of the reasons it's hard to put it down. That's one of the reasons it's hard to stop cocaine. That's one of the reasons that people might have 3 or 4 bites of a delicious dessert and be like, it doesn't taste so good the fifth bite, but I'm just eating it more of it because I remember the beginning. And so that dynamic is really part of why, anxiety and depression and irritation have increased, but also social isolation, which actually increases depression and anxiety.
Absolutely. So there's so many things that are coming to my mind that I'd love to unpack. And I know that a lot of people try to set limits, like limiting, turning their notifications off, but it rarely lasts. And I mean, I'm going to pull from a personal example. I realized that I was waking up to my alarm on my phone. And then the first thing I would do is roll over, open my eyes, turn my alarm off, but then look at my emails, my messages, and social media and respond to notifications within like seconds of waking up. And I realized that that was slowly causing destructive behavior. Like I was just not feeling well. So I tried to limit myself and it was really, really difficult. Why isn't discipline or willpower enough to change our phone habits? Like what is needed?
The word that I use is infrastructure. That what's an infrastructure? Do you know?
Infrastructure is like a system.
Yes. Roads are an infrastructure. And there's just something we take for granted, but if you think about it, we should be appreciating them because they get us to where we want to go. And they're really well thought out, and everybody is in agreement. It's a stoplight, I'll stop. It's a stop sign, I'll go, right? So that infrastructure that we take for granted keeps us safe and empowers us to go and do whatever we want. What we have to realize is willpower is not enough because of how this phone is basically wired to keep us on it. So we have to create an infrastructure. Before the pandemic, I worked with 7 families to just play around with this question of how do they have phones in their life? How do they introduce their children to them? And we really came up with this concept of an infrastructure. And we use the acronym ACT. A is awareness, just being aware of the science of the phone. It's not about willpower, that it is rigged to keep you on it. So you have to then rig your infrastructure to keep you off of it. So A is the awareness of that. So that's simple. C is really 2 things. One is you have to curate your feed. And that means that if you aren't careful, you will be watching crap. I have treated a lot of porn addictions that were accidentally started because people got on, they, were looking at one thing, and before they know it, now the addiction of, the dopamine being, an experience of watching puppies is now watching porn. And that's even a more intense experience of dopamine.
Yeah.
And people are spending hours. And so one of the things that I encourage people to do is be intentional about what you watch, right? So you curate it. And that means that a lot of people take off apps that they spend too much time with. They decide, if I want to be on social media, do I really need two or three platforms? I can just do one. And so people really think through in an intentional way, much the way that people do in setting up a house, right? If people move into an apartment, they give some thought to how do I want it to look so I feel at home, so I feel warm and cozy, or I feel whatever is the ambiance you're going for. I think we should curate the phone in the same way. It should not be something that we have to fight with because we have too many social media apps on. And so that, I think that's curated is that. The other is a hard part. It's to create phone-free time. It will not happen because of the addictive nature of it, that people have to create an infrastructure. And the families I worked with, they really played around with this. Some people left them in their cars who had garages, and they left them in their cars after work. Many people ended up, putting them upstairs. One of the things that we know is if it's by you, it's calling you. It's calling you. And it,
One
and I,
thousand
you,
percent.
yes. And so I used to, I have a mental wellness program called Inner Challenge, and I taught it to Notre Dame football players, which is a university here in the States that plays football. And I went into their to talk to their, what was it, their strength coach. And I had my phone in my hand, and he said, "Oh, you can't have phones in here, and we don't want them on your body." And I said, "Oh," he said, "you can put it in your briefcase or backpack." I said, "Oh, why is that?" And this is like 2016, maybe.
Oh,
And
wow.
he showed me that he explained to me that even when I'm not on it, that phone is messing with my brain because there's this electronic frequency, and things are downloading all the time. And he said to me, "Do you ever pick up your phone and someone is calling you?" I'm like, "Oh, that happens to me all the time. It's my kids." And I kind of told myself this story that, oh, I just have kind of a mother's intuition. It's my child calling, and they're not even ringing because I have my ringer off. He said, "No, it's the phone notifying your brain without the ringer. That's why you can't have it by you, because it will always be distracting you." And so again, we all walk around with them. I have it in my pocket, blah, blah, blah. But it is so important for our well-being to have it away from us for a few hours during the day. And people can decide where. I have some clients who are doctors, and they, are on call. They can't do it, but they're the exception, and they're not on call every day. And that is an infrastructure that we take the road to work. We can come home and have an infrastructure that says, my phone is going in my bedroom, where it's inconvenient to go get it. People do this with food all the time. I mean, so we're not learning new skills, right? People all the time do this with food. Like, oh, I'm not going to buy those chips because if I have them in my house, I'm going to eat them. Or I'm going to
Totally.
just, So it's the same idea. Is the second of the C is, create phone-free time. Can I tell you what four of the seven families ended up doing?
Yeah, I'm so curious.
So anybody out there who has children with cell phones knows, and we have research, it's very depressing. Like 70% of conversations between parents and children are about devices.
Wow.
70%. And it's mostly fighting. They're not, talking to each other about how great they are. So these families kept trying different ways, but they were having so much conflict between them and their kids that one of the men bought online a lockbox, and they had 2.5 hours a day of phone-free time that worked for everybody. People sat down, they decided as a group, The kids, of course, were not happy, but sometimes you got them to make your kids not happy. And they locked them up. And they just were like, wow, what a difference. So then some of the other families tried it. And there was normal pushback, like, this is ridiculous. We should have willpower, blah, blah. But the problem is these phones have no guidelines, right? There's no guardrails. We have to create them. And so what was very interesting is the family that was the most hesitant, about 7 or 8 months later, did try it. And it got rid of the tension because it's locked up. And then the parents don't have to keep holding the line, or the kids aren't sneaking in to see where the mom is putting the cell phone. So one mom said, this is a bigger pain in the ass than the else that we have to hide every morning, because you can't hide it in the same place. The kids just go get it. And so this one father said to me, this is how I've come to peace with this. He said, I hunt every fall. My, buddies and I are deer hunters, and we lock our guns up. And I've come to feel that these phones are more dangerous for my kids than guns. So I'm going to have them locked up in the mudroom, and they're there for 2.5 hours a day. And I think that's how extreme it's come, but that's the infrastructure that these families decided on.
It's so sorry to interrupt, but I'm just like my heart is like breaking for children who are growing up with these phones, because I've seen instances where children had such bad social anxiety together that they couldn't communicate one-on-one without using their phones. They were literally on the same couch, refusing to look at each other, communicating to each other on a cell phone because of their social anxiety, because they're constantly on these devices. And so they're not developing those social skills that you and I grew up learning how to use, how to communicate with each other. I didn't have a cell phone. I went outside. I had Mickey Mouse sweaters and I built forts, you know. And now I'm seeing little, like a 5-year-old with a cell phone in a doctor's office, preoccupied and completely lost in these devices. And that totally breaks my heart.
No, we have science that is very reliable that this is changing the brains of children. And, the
Scary.
American Medical Association is, they don't want kids on them. They're talking about no screen time under two. Like, I think it's 2.5 hours for people who are five. No, a 1 hour for like 2 to 5 year olds, 1 hour with an adult watching a show. But not on the phone unless you're FaceTiming grandmother. So, and I think what's really unfair is there are no guidelines, there are no guardrails, there's no regulation on these phones. That, there is so much on the phone that the teenagers that I work with, it's so negative and it's really destructive. And now we have AI coming in. So now we are beginning to have all these lawsuits where, and this is true, people may not know this. I think there's 23 lawsuits of teenagers who have killed themselves, and AI, ChatGPT has helped them figure out how to do it. And now there's the first lawsuit of, I think, a 40-year-old man. And there's no government regulation that we have had historically. We have regulation about roads, we have regulation about cars, we have regulation about alcohol. And it's a lot to ask people to regulate themselves when the device has been designed to keep you addicted. It's a lot.
Oh my gosh. So I want you to explain to everybody what the three C's are. I know you mentioned two of them,
Yes.
but can you explain to us? You talk about the three C's when it comes to phone
Yes.
use. What are they and how can they help someone regain control?
Okay, I actually could I finish my little acronym? ACT is awareness of the science. C is create phone-free time or curate. T is probably the most important thing, and that is take the phone out of your bedroom at night. If there was one easy thing that someone could do, there are these really cool things called alarm clocks. And they're like, you can get them at Goodwill stores. You can, but That's the hardest thing for my clients. Many of my clients, they share their sleep and their phone use early in the session. And I think it's really a fair statement to say that most of my clients would say what really helped them feel better was they took the phone out of their room for
Wow.
exactly what you said. One is it's downloading all night, disrupting your sleep. And when we get up in the morning, who in the morning has the willpower to not look at the phone? And it's helping you feel better in the short run, but worse in the long run, because nobody keeps to a minute or two. It's 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 40 minutes. And so, like, I have my phone outside of my bedroom and I have an alarm clock. And so I have to get up and walk to get it. But the ideal is to have it farther away so you don't look at it for the first 45 minutes of the day. That your brain really needs that to wake up. And so, that's the end. It's awareness, curate, create phone-free time, and take it out of your bedroom. So any
Yeah,
thought on
so
that, or do you want
important.
me to?
No, I'm just kind of reflecting on how challenging that is for people, like how extremely challenging. But it's like just picturing like when you wake up, we're not being shot out of a cannon. You know, that's kind of what we're doing to our bodies is like
Yes.
waking up and boom, you're like exposed to everything and anything, right? And I know even for myself, when I see an email, I can feel my heart rate increase a little bit. You know, all my apps tell me that just by getting a notification causes some stress and dis-ease in my body. And so subjecting yourself to that as soon as you wake up, I think that is a really important point, and I really think that people should take that seriously.
Yes.
And not
I
even to
and I
mention the
also want.
EMFs, like the electromagnetic frequencies that they emit that you're talking about. That's a real thing that actually keeps you awake at night. I did an experiment with, I have EMF protectors on my phone, and it literally, using an EMF device, it blocks the EMFs. And it wasn't placebo. It literally changed the way that my sleep is.
Yeah, well,
I've
because I mean,
used
if you
my.
have you have a sleep device that you can track it, right? Your
Yeah.
sleep. Yeah. Is it the silver bags that you used for the
So what I
EMF
use are
device?
these shields. There's like
Oh,
seven
okay.
different layers of different metals, Japanese
Yeah.
metals. They've been tested, tried and true. So I have these on all my devices in my space, my TV, my laptop. But the phone is really important because this is on the body most of the day, right? It's
Yeah.
always near me. And so I try and limit the exposure to that. And I've noticed a huge difference. So much so that when I plug my TV in, I can feel almost like a buzzing, like with my body, because I'm just really in tune with that. Yeah, incredible.
Yeah. I mean, I think those are areas that are being researched, and the research is really leaning in that direction, that we are surrounded by these huge electromagnetic fields that are disrupting our bodies. Some of that we don't have control over, but the phone we do. We actually do. And the number one thing people say to me is, well, I need my phone in the room if it's an emergency. And okay, I mean, then set it out in the hallway with the ringer on high, right? And I want people to feel empowered. I don't think this little thing should take away our agency. And I think we underestimate our ability to really do what we want. When I wake up, I remember a couple months ago, I woke up, I looked at the phone, I'm reading about Jennifer Aniston. Like, I wish her well, but at 5:30 in the morning, do I really want to read about her? No, that's ridiculous, right? And I think about how much of my energy goes towards people I don't know when I don't have my phone use controlled. And then how little energy I have for the people I know and I love. Like, that's bizarre.
It
So
is bizarre.
I am a, I'm a therapist. I've done this for 40 years. I love for people to get better. And I think that people naturally don't like to feel deprived. And that's why I would love for people to take their phone out of the room. And some people will, some people won't. But I will say it's the number one thing that my client says make a difference. It's not same, some great therapeutic intervention, in all honesty, because our lifestyle is so bad that we need sleep. The phone affects our sleep. But I began to play around last fall with what is it that the phone is used for? It's used to connect through text messages, emails. It's used to consume. We buy on it. We look at things on it, and it's used to create. We take pictures, we take funny videos. And I've really started to ask my clients to try to do those three things every day in person, just one time. So instead of sending a text, pick up the phone and call someone. You're using the phone, but you're actually having a very different experience. Even doing FaceTime is a different experience. I had a young woman in my office who was saying something. She was stressed about a lot of things, and she's like, "I've got to get my roommate a birthday present." And I said, "Oh," I said, "that's not enjoyable. That's stressful." She goes, "Oh," she goes, "I get online and I start looking for the perfect gift, and it's a black hole." And I'm like, "Yeah, I understand that experience." I said, "Have you ever thought of going to a store? I mean, you could go to the store and buy, and then it's contained." I said, "There's actually right around from my office this adorable little store that has lots of cute things." So after her session, she went and she sent me a text. She was holding the present that the store wrapped for her, and it was a cute little present, and she was happy. And the next session, she said to me, "That was bizarre. I had such a great time. The saleswomen were so fun." And I said, "Yeah, this is the thing I'm playing around, like consume, connect, create." And create, another example is that I have a client who is actually a graphic artist, and she's very good at making like videos for TikTok and things. And but then what was her like experience of creating became kind of a job, right? It's no fun if you have, she's an influencer and she's doing that. So she really decided she needed to find another way to create, because now that's online, it's full of a lot of pressure. And she always kept saying, "Well, that's how I'm getting my creativity." So then she ended up deciding that she was going to bake things for her neighbor. And so she's very creative. I would just bake banana bread, but she did it in a really clever way. And so she ended up making these really amazing, beautiful looking cookies that she would take to her elderly neighbor. So in that one experience that she said took her an hour, it was not like baking cookies was a 4-hour project. She had this creative experience. She connected with her neighbor, and it was like a twofer. And I know that sounds like, MJ, why are you telling people to do what we have been wired to do from the beginning? Connect with each other, go out to the stores and shop, and create. It's because the phone is sucking that all out of us. And we can bring it back, and we don't have to be extreme. Just do one thing a day.
I remember recently, a couple of years ago, I was doing some volunteer work at a local jail. And when I went in, they said, "You're not allowed to bring your cell phone in." So I went back to my car and I put it in my car. And when I got into the jail, I remember feeling this bizarre sense of freedom. In a sense, because it was like, because they had rules and regulations, I actually could not have my phone on my body, on my person. It had to be locked away. And that meant that no one could get a hold of me during that time, that I literally could disappear from the planet. And it was legitimate. And for some reason, the psychology of that affected me in such a way that made me feel this unbelievable sense of freedom. Just, it was incredible.
I think it's really true. I think we don't understand how burdensome they've become. Addiction is always a burden. There's nobody that says, "God, it is so awesome to be addicted to fill in the blank." Last holiday season, I decided to not take my phone into any holiday parties.
Good for
And
you.
it was transformative. And I said this to one of my friends, and they're like, "But what if your children have an emergency?" I'm like, "Then actually, I mean, I'm a very caring mother. My children are 30, 3 and 35. Like if they have an emergency, they're not even in town for the first thing. And then I probably would have another hour or two of having a fun time at a party, and then I'll help them deal with their emergency, right?
Yeah.
And so, and even with teenagers, I've had clients who have done this that have said, you know, I am not taking my phone into the party. I'm not taking my phone into this, so you can't get hold of me. And when this all started years ago, we gave children phones for emergencies. And I work a lot with teenagers. Like I've had over 50,000 hours of therapy sessions. Probably 25,000 of those have been with teenagers. I can think of one time when a kid called their parent in a true emergency. Often, when there's a true emergency, they're doing something and they're in trouble and they're not calling their parents. I mean, they might have a fender bender. That's an emergency. But from the beginning of driving, kids figured out how to handle that without calling their parents because they didn't have a phone, right? And so, again, I don't want to be extreme. That sounds extreme. The point is, we don't have to have it with us all the time.
Yeah, I think another phenomenon now that has come up is this idea that every single thing we do in life needs to be blogged, needs to be photographed. And so that's another thing that the phones, in my opinion, are causing is people, including myself, I catch myself all the time, I'll be at a concert, I'll be out at a holiday party, and I'll be taking videos and photos of the thing that I very much went to spend time with. And then I'm
Yeah.
thinking to myself, this is ridiculous. I'm watching the performer on my little screen and videoing it and then posting it or sending it to whoever. So I think that makes it, that's another layer that we haven't even touched on, is that this idea that everything, every part of our lives needs to be documented.
Yeah. And you know, I kind of live in the world that we're just not that fascinating. That I know if we understand this is one huge push for money. Everything is about money. And I like money, and people have to pay to see me. I understand that. I'm not against it, but all things in moderation. And so one of the things that I've worked with people on is deciding like how, like, okay, I had clients who went to go see Taylor Swift, right? Fantastic once in a lifetime experience. And I literally said to them, I want you to have a plan for your cell phone. Because I actually saw Taylor Swift at the Reputation concert prior to Eras. And it was a surreal experience. And I made a conscious decision that I would have two different times during the show because I'm in the audience. I'm not getting good pictures of Taylor Swift. But the energy around that experience is really better than Taylor Swift. I hate to say it, but the crowd outshines her if you're in it. It's all amazing. And I think that's true, that we often give away our energy to these phones. And I think if people can, like you said, like play with it, experiment with it. Don't trust me, you're your own person. Like people hate they're on the phone so much. Put it down. And run your own experiment for 2 weeks. I've had, prior to the pandemic, from 2017 to the pandemic, I had 30 people, 30 intakes that people came and they were sleeping like 5.5 hours a night. They were on the phone about 6 to 9 hours. So they got their sleep up to 7, they got their phone down to 2, and their symptoms of anxiety and depression went away. It's so incredible. I was like, one of the people I've often told this story, he was a college student and he was very motivated and he worked on his sleep. You know, he did them both. And really, in 3 weeks, he had it turned around. When he came back for that third session, I did not recognize him because he physically looked so different. And sleep and phones are two sides of the same coin. When people get their phone use under 2 hours a day, their sleep goes up. When people take their phone out of their room, their phone use goes down. So they're a pulley with each other.
Right. I was just going to ask you about the emotional changes that people notice when they first start reclaiming, excuse me, even 1 or 2 hours a day without their phone. And so you answered that with the anxiety and the depression. But what do you think surprises people the most once they step back from their phone?
I actually have two podcasts where I followed a maybe 35-year-old woman who went off TikTok cold turkey. And she loved it because TikTok's amazing. And in the first month, she lost 8 pounds. And her boyfriend that she was living with said, "You are so much nicer to be around."
It's
And
interesting.
she, I mean, and you can listen to that. I forget what episode. I can send you the link, but you can listen to it's just like snippets of like, 8 minutes at month one, and then another 6 minutes at month two, and it was very transformative. And I actually saw her a few weeks ago. She's never gotten back on it because she said the quality of her life is so much better. And the other thing is, I think there's a deep loneliness. Like, well, I've done this for 40 years. I did not. My, from 1986 when I started to 91, I had six clients that were anxious. I mean, I see like 25 to 35 people a week in those days. And so I don't think the phone's the only reason for anxiety, but the biggest difference I see is loneliness. And I think the phone is very responsible for loneliness, and it's also in the States, it's created this incredible political divide. Because the other thing I would want, people to understand is that algorithms, in a phone is giving you more of what you want. So how I describe it to people is this. Let's say that you go to a buffet for dinner and they notice, oh my gosh, that person eats the chicken and the mashed potatoes and the pies. And the next time you go, they're giving you more types of chicken, more types of mashed potatoes, more types of pie. And they're curating the dinner so it is everything that you want. And that makes it hard to not overeat. That's what happens on the phone. The algorithms are seeing what you look at and they're sending you more and more. They hear what you're talking about. I've been in a car talking to something to someone about mix masters and then stopped at the gas station to get gas, and there's ads for Mixmasters on my phone. Like they are listening to us, even if we don't have it on, and they're sending us things to keep us on. But they're also doing that with the political divide. The States is a wreck because half the people love Trump, half the people hate Trump, and they're only seeing their side, and it's getting everyone so, rooted in what their belief is, and it's hard to be able to be balanced because we only read one side and it's doing our thinking for us. And I think about most adults, if there was going to be, an 18-year-old who pushed you around, who made you late for work, who disrupted your sleep, who told you what to think, most adults wouldn't tolerate it. They'd be like, "Hey, kid, you're 18 years old, live a little and then boss me around." But that's what's happened.
Yeah, I think the phone gives an illusion of connection when it's really dividing us even further apart. There's this deep, deep, deep loneliness happening within people. They reach for their phone, they send someone a message, they're waiting for their response, they're commenting on someone's social media. They don't even know these people. Like what you said, I was laughing about your Jennifer Aniston comment because it's true. Like I send messages sometimes to people that I don't know very well because I feel connected to this illusion that they're presenting and it's not real, right? We're seeing all of these truths coming out in the world right now in many different forms. And the biggest truth is that what we're seeing on social media and the internet is all curated. It's being presented to us so that we believe something that is not real. It's like a Pinterest beautiful homes, like people's lives are perfect and everything is cookie cutter, but it's not true and it's not real. And I love that you're trying to get people back to connect to their themselves. I think that's how people are going to survive these next decades is by reconnecting to themselves. Because I think the, like you said, the phone is just creating so much of a divide. It's a really challenging topic. I'm fascinated by it. What about, MJ, from your decades of work with helping people with mental wellness, what are a few ways that someone can create some more calm and presence in their day?
I always encourage people to start with sleep and the phone.
Yeah.
That you can do all the breath work, all the meditation, all the exercise you want, but it is going back to the basics that we sleep is the most fundamental thing. And most of my clients, that's where we have to start because of all the entertainment, all the devices that keep us on. It's very difficult. I love new parents because they're so intense about getting their children to bed and they're so committed to it and they don't do that for themselves, right? And I think of sleep as a skill set. So that would be one. And I think the other thing is, I think we underestimate, we can handle a little anxiety. Like, I think the idea that people have is, I shouldn't be anxious. Oh, no, like the body is wired to be anxious. The phone makes us more anxious, but don't underestimate your ability to push through the anxiety and do it anyways. Like how do we treat social anxiety? We go out socially.
Yeah.
We don't stay home and let it get worse. And the reason it gets worse when we're at home is we're on a device, and that device is playing with our mind and our mind, and it's playing with our brain on a neurochemical level. And our mind, because we look at everybody and they look so great, they look so this, they look so that,
We're
and then
having so
people
much
feel
fun.
bad about, right? And then I can't go out. And so one of the
Or
things
laying
my
in bed on a
client,
Friday night and everyone else is partying or having fun and I'm stuck in my bed. Yeah, it's true.
yeah, and especially also like I've been at work all by myself all day. Well, I mean, I saw four clients in the morning, but then I was like, nope, I need to go and I need to be out and about. I need to be at a coffee shop in the afternoon. Because
Yeah.
I know it's not okay to just be alone by myself all the time. And so I know I'm going to run into people I know, and that's fun. I sat and talked to some people. And so I think sometimes we act like we're teacups. And most people are not teacups. Most people really, you can be anxious and do it anyways. And that's one of the things I think my clients often say to me is that they've often gotten the impression from other therapists, from what they are online, that they should get over their anxiety and then go out. No, you actually go out to get over your anxiety. It's a muscle. And we lost that muscle with the advent of the phone. And then we had this bizarre thing with the pandemic where everyone lost it again. And we have to work to get it back. But it's work that we're wired to do. We're meant to be connecting.
Yes, there's a misconception about things like anxiety and even confidence. Confidence comes from doing. It doesn't, we're not born, well, we're born confident, I guess, but we don't just have confidence, we have to earn it. And so by doing, you become confident. By going out, like you said, you become less anxious. What about if someone listening wants to start taking control of their phone instead of the other way around, what is one small step that they could try today?
I would either take it out of the room at night or just create phone-free time. Leave it in your car, leave it somewhere inconvenient, and your body will buzz because you're withdrawing from it. You'll feel like you're not sure what to do, and that's where you get to get back in connection to you. Now we're connected. I've asked this question to a million people, no, probably 1,000. How many times have you lost your phone for good? How many times have you lost your phone forever?
None.
Right. The only time people have lost it forever is if they were boating and it went in the water. That is the single example of how wired these phones are to us. I have left my phone in a Target and gone back 3 hours later, and there it was next to the shirt that I was looking at. Right? I mean, We know when we don't have them and we go find them. And so it is okay to put it away and feel like something's missing, because it is. But you have to listen to who you are, not who to the phone is. And that voice of what you want to do, it takes a while. You ground your feet on the floor and you're like, what do I want to do? And you'll probably feel empty inside. And then you'd be like, well, I don't know, I could go for a walk, or I could call my mom on the phone, or, and just live with that uncertainty, because that's what we have to get back to is, creating. Maybe I want to do a puzzle. Maybe I want to read a book. Like, we have to have some things that we do every day that are not connected to any kind of device. And so it's not taking it away and nothing's there. It's taking it away because we're replacing it with things that are meaningful. And so one of the things the client who went to the and bought the birthday present did is that every week she started to meet her sister for coffee. And her sister used to sit on the couch and text each other at night. And she's like, let's meet for coffee. Let's see each other. We live in the same town. So those little things, they really make a big difference. They make a big, big, big difference.
Absolutely. MJ, tell everyone more about the work that you do and where people can find more information about you.
Okay. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I'm also a coach. I wear two hats. And my coaching is, I have a mental wellness program called Inner Challenge. And I do have a master class coming out this spring. If people are interested, they can email me at mjmurraybishan.com. And one of my biggest passions is we focus a lot on mental illness and we don't know what mental wellness is. And I'm really someone who has learned through trial and error of working with so many people that people need to know what mental illness is. I did another podcast with Stacey earlier on that, of when you understand mental wellness, whether you have a mental illness or not, you will feel a heck of a lot better. And it is easy to cultivate. It's very easy, but you have to know what to do.
Absolutely. So this has been such an important conversation. Thank you so much for being here. I think so many people feel that tension between wanting to stay connected, but also wanting that time back. So this has been a really powerful episode. We'll make sure to have information about your work, your master class, and your website and links in the show notes for people to have easy access to those. Thank you so much again for being here. Do you have any final thoughts?
No, I just have to say, one of the really fun parts about being a therapist is people managing their phone is a super easy fix with a really huge reward. And you can do it. You can do it. And you're going to fall off the, it's just like food. You're going to do well for a while, fall off the boat, get back on. So we have to understand that it's not a straight line, that most of my clients will be like, oh, had a bad week. That's fine. We're human. I had a bad week too. Let's get back on it. And so don't expect that you're not going to be struggling with it, because it's designed to keep you hooked in.
Absolutely. Thank you so much again for this really important conversation.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And to our audience, thank you so much for tuning in. It's time that you take control of your phone and your habits instead of letting the phone control you. I know I'm going to try a little bit harder, especially after this episode. Stay tuned for the next one. Until next time, bye everyone.